Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Well, they are pinched and poked, jostled, burned, and bullied. They take orders. They are among the lowest paid people in this country, and yet perhaps more than any other worker, they keep coming back. In fact, they have to. They have nowhere to hide. They smile, they're polite, and they continue to serve us. They are the waitresses, 1.5 million strong, logging 12 hours straight at a truck stop, split shifts at high-class restaurants, refilling coffee cups in every state of the union. Allison Owings has interviewed dozens of them for her book, Hey Waitress. It reads like an anthology of love and grief, anger and courage, and it tries to show us this country from the other side of the tray. Connection listeners, truth is, waitresses see us. They see us as the worst and the best of humanity in the way we talk, the way we behave, and the way we tip. So how do you see the relationship? And if you happen to be in the business with an insight to share, give us a call. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Allison Owings, the author, is my guest today. She joins us from the NPR station KQED in San Francisco. Hi, Allison.
Hi.
Now, if I'm right, you tried waiting as a kid. You went back to it in the service of writing this book, and you were neither times particularly good at it.
Oh, I was just terrible. I worked for a little bit at a Hojo's on the Pennsylvania Turnpike in high school, and I was embarrassed by tips, actually. I handed my first one back to the customer saying, oh, no, that's okay, you keep it. And then when I finished doing all the interviews for this book, about 70, I guess, I decided to try it again just to see what it was like, and I worked for a friend just for a day in a catering job, and there were no tips involved, but the insults and the intimacy among the
Be specific. What do you mean the insults and the intimacy?
The insults from the customers were just astonishing to me. And one woman literally jabbed me in the hip to say she wanted some more decaf. And I was really astonished by that. I was astonished that I got it and I poured it in her cup and not on her head. I was disappointed a little at my reaction. And I realized you could take these things personally, as many waitresses do. And yet, on the other hand, I really got a sense of the camaraderie among the people who wait tables themselves. You really have a support staff in your colleagues.
You did a little bit of historical research in setting up the way that waitresses understand the work that they do and the way that the customers understand the role of the waitress. And I was actually struck by the fact that so much of it is rooted in women serving men alcohol.
Yes, yes. In fact, I think that's really where the scandal, so to speak, began when women in an era when alcohol was certainly not terribly common, at least among middle class people and women especially, came into contact in the 18th and 19th century with drinking men, male strangers who drank alcohol. I think the connection was really fixed once women served men alcohol. Serving them food was not much different, and I think they still to this day continue to be put down a little by that old stigma.
And there was someone else's work, a woman by the name of Frances Donovan, who wrote a book, what, about 85, 90 years ago?
Yes. Oh, that was fascinating. She was a sociologist and newspaper woman. She had lots of careers, and she decided to go underground as a waitress in Chicago. And she said this very funny line. She said, unfortunately, as soon as I put on an apron, everyone took me for a waitress. She was expecting somehow to be considered in a more lofty profession. But she got hooked by tips, actually, and yet she was very upset about how the women were treated, and she was also scandalized by the oaths that the women uttered among themselves in the basement dressing room. She was rather snobby about the whole thing, yet she still was a muckraker.
Now, your conclusion is that she did have kind of a condescending attitude towards what, the
yes.
women who did it or the work that had to be done? I'm not clear on that.
No, toward the women who did it. I think one of the ironies in all of my research is, who is going to do this if the women or the men don't do it? If people are going to go to restaurants, somebody is going to serve them unless they're replaced by automats or cafeterias or people stop eating out. Somebody is going to serve. But the irony is that even though people want this food, like this food generally, they seem to look down on the people who bring it to them. And then the contrasting irony, really the paradox, is that most of the women who do serve food, in my opinion anyway, take an enormous amount of pride in their work, at least some aspect of their work, even while they know that society at large is putting them down for doing the work in the first place.
Why is it that you chose to separate waiters from waitresses in for the book?
Well, I guess because I think waitresses have more of a burden to bear. Their trays are heavier, so to speak. They have the huge sexual component of being waitresses. I don't think there's any waitress who hasn't had some sexual component of the job part of her history. And waiters generally have it easier. They have a little bit of sexuality sometimes as part of the job, but not that often. They generally get tipped more, according to my very informal research. Husband and wife teams say the men typically get 10 to 15% more tips. And women bear the stigma more than men of serving tables. And I just wanted to focus on the women because they carry the icon and heavier trays, I guess.
Tell me if my own notion, Allison, is in your work something of a sexist perspective. But one of the conclusions of Franny Donovan's work is that, you know, there's always something of a personal relationship that develops between the waitress and the customer. It might be frosty, might be warm, might be flirtatious, but I mean, it has some certain aspect of a personal relationship. And as I was listening to you describe what separates the waiters from the waitresses, I was thinking, well, I'm not as conscious of that kind of relationship between me and a waiter. Is that just because mm-hmm. it's two guys? Or do you think there's more to it than that?
No, I think it's pretty much that. I think men who are lonely, not that you would be a man who's necessarily lonely, often find, and Frances Donovan found this too in the 1910 or so, that the easiest way to meet a woman and to have any kind of conversation with her is to go into a restaurant and be served by her. And part of her job is to be nice to you. And these days, when sometimes tips are the only money a woman gets, no salary at all, especially if she's working under the same table she's serving, then she really has to be nice for you, or she might not even get paid. But I find it interesting that men apparently start these conversations with women, but women don't. I don't think I have ever asked a waitress what her name is. And some waitresses have told me that women never ask their names, but men often do. Some of the women in my book said they think it's very much a power relationship, that men are trying to show they're in charge, and if you know a waitress's name, that sort of shows that you're the boss and she isn't. There's all kinds of levels of discomfort, I think, in the relationship that some of us don't even pick up on. For instance, some people like to chat up their waitresses, and the women basically have told me, well, if you have time, that's fine, but, you know, right. I've really got other tables to serve.
We'll be talking through the hour to a couple of the waitresses who actually are interviewed for Allison's book. And we'll go to Margie Watson, who's been listening into the conversation. Margie is a professional waitress, has logged Lord knows how many miles between tables and kitchens and some, what, 30 years in the business, Margie?
That's right, Dick.
Margie's joining us from Memphis, Tennessee. Now, Margie, help us with your view of this You're walking up to a table. It's a group of people you've never met before. What's in your mind?
Well, first of all, I want to say hello to them and ask them how they're doing and start by a conversation like that. And usually you will find out real quick if they're going to be nice, if they're going to be bad by their attitude or how they talk back to you.
But you've got to serve them whether they're nice or whether they're bad.
That's right. But I had a good teacher that always told me not to never stoop down to their low and be like them, smile and say, I'm sorry, and walk away. So that was a good lesson for me. And so I'm going to be extra nice to them. And if they want to be mean and bad to me, I'm just going to ignore it. And I'm going to make them feel bad themselves.
But one of your teachers also drilled it into you that the customer is always right.
Yes, that was one of my bosses, Daddy Ray, always told me that. And I can see, in a way, what he was talking about. Could I tell you a little bit about a story about a customer I waited on?
Sure.
A man come into the restaurant one day, and he ordered a plate of spaghetti. I went by later, and I noticed he wasn't eating his spaghetti. Well, I offered, and I said, sir, is something wrong with your spaghetti? He said, don't worry about it, just real smart-like. And he knocked the plate plumb across the table up against the wall. Well, I just reached over, and I was just going to get it out of the way. He let me know real fast. He said, don't touch it. So I said, oh, excuse me. Well, I knew then that this man was fixing to cause me problems, so I automatically went to my boss and told him what had happened. He told me not to charge the man anyway, if he was not going to take a replacement meal. But when he came to the restaurant for his ticket, I said, sir, you don't owe me a dime. And he got a little loud and said, yes, I do, a couple of times. And I said, your spaghetti is on me. That's one of our policies. Well, he insisted on paying the bill, but I insisted that we don't take the money from the customer if they're not satisfied. Well, he left. Well, we had a real busy lunch hour that day, and I guess it had been about 2 hours, and a man came up from behind me and tapped me on my shoulder. And I done forgot about the incident because I'd been so busy. Well, he come back, and he said, madam, you went out of your way to be extra nice to me and apologize. You tried every way under the sun to make me happy. And he said, I was so rude to you, it's pathetic. He said, my conscience is bothering me, so I've come back to pay for that spaghetti because it cost you all money. To begin with, it wasn't nothing wrong with the spaghetti, he told me. And then he said, me and my wife had had a fight when I came in here, and I came in and took it out on your spaghetti and on you. Well, the next thing I knew, he had done went and paid for his spaghetti. He had tipped me $3 and apologized for the whole incident. So then that's when my boss, Daddy Ray, came back to me, and he said, see, sis, that's why I'm always telling you the customer's always right.
Margie, I got time for just one more line from you, and that is you did look across the tray. What's the view from the other side? What's the one thing you'd say to customers that you want them to keep in mind?
I want them to know that we're just important at our job as they are at their jobs. We have a job to perform just like they have a job to perform, and we're getting paid less than what they are.
$2.13 an hour, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
Margie?
And then you pay 8% tax on all of your sales for your foods and your drinks.
Margie, I got to go. I want to thank you for being with us on the program.
Okay, thank you, Dick.
Nice to talk to you. 1-800-423-8255. Hey, Waitress is the name of the book we're talking about, written by Allison Owings. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection on NPR, and we're talking with Allison Owings, author of Hey Waitress, the USA from the Other Side of the Tray. Here's what she marks as the most famous waitress scene in American film.
I'd like a plain omelet, no potatoes, tomatoes instead, a cup of coffee, and toast.
No substitution.
What do you mean, you don't have any tomatoes?
Only what's on the menu. You can have a number two, a plain omelet. It comes with cottage fries and rolls.
Yeah, I know what it comes with, but it's not what I want.
Well, I'll come back when you make up your mind.
Wait a minute. I have made up my mind. I'd like a plain omelet, no potatoes on the plate, a cup of coffee, and a side order of wheat toast.
I'm sorry, we don't have any side orders of toast. I'll give you an English muffin or a coffee roll.
What do you mean you don't make side orders of toast? You make sandwiches, don't you?
Would you like to talk to the manager?
Hey, Mac.
Shut up. You've got bread. And a toaster of some kind?
I don't make the rules.
Okay, I'll make it as easy for you as I can. I'd like an omelet, plain, and a chicken salad sandwich on wheat toast. No mayonnaise, no butter, no lettuce, and a cup of coffee.
And number two, chicken salad sandwich. All the butter, the lettuce, and the mayonnaise, and a cup of coffee. Anything else?
Yeah, now all you have to do is hold the chicken, bring me the toast, give me a check for the chicken salad sandwich, and you haven't broken any rules.
You want me to hold the chicken, huh?
I want you to hold it between your knees.
That, of course, Jack Nicholson from Five Easy Pieces, the movie made in 1970. With me on the program, Allison Owings. And Allison, you... I'm thinking of
oh, I hate that scene.
I was going to say, it's an interesting contrast to the dignity that Margie describes in the work that she performs, and how, as filmgoers or observers, you know, there's a bit of Hollywood that wants us to be more kind of on Jack Nicholson's side than the waitress's side.
Absolutely. I think, in fact, I remember seeing that movie, and I'm sure I laughed, and the entire theater was laughing. But I had occasion to talk with the great oral historian Studs Terkel about it, and he said, oh, he hates that scene, too. It's just a put-down of the waitress. And really, she's following orders, but she can't make the substitutions. But everyone thinks that, oh, Jack Nicholson is so macho and so funny and all this stuff. But I really hate that scene. It really, truly is a put down of waitresses. And I think it encourages people to think of waitresses as automatons who can't really do anything on their own. And sometimes, literally, they can't.
Well, it cuts to one of the conclusions in your book, and that is that the customer-waitress relationship reminds us way too often that class lives in America.
Oh, yes. If there's anything I have found in this book, and this was interviewing waitresses literally all over the country, and former and current waitresses, it is that this country, unfortunately, is just riven by what I refer to as classism. The put-downs of women who do the work is just unbelievable. I was talking to a New York diner waitress about a year ago. I worked this into her story in the book. And she said to a customer, oh, I see you've been to the Galapagos, because he was wearing a Galapagos T-shirt. And he looks up at her and he says, how did you hear about the Galapagos? And that sort of thing happens all the time. How would you know about anything? And if there's anything I try to do in the book, it's to make the women unstereotyped and to show just how different they are. And they come from all different backgrounds, all different levels of education. They're not the same woman. And yet, by just doing the job they're doing, they get dumped upon so much by this attitude of, well, you are just a waitress, as if people have no idea what else they know, what their lives are like, and how hard the work is itself. It's just astonishing to me.
Let's hear from Catherine Blunt. Catherine has waitressed on and off, terrible verb, for more than 30 years. Catherine, since you were 16 years old, right?
That's right.
And in every manner of restaurant?
In every manner of restaurant. I started out at 16 at PJ's Pancake House in Princeton, New Jersey, which was a pretty crazy place. Pretty busy.
And the story that's described in Allison's book is a story of crabby, stingy bosses, sexist cooks, rude customers, and yet you saying you'll go back to waiting tables anytime.
The reason for that, I think there's a certain autonomy in waitressing. It's not a heavy commitment, or it can be not a heavy commitment, although I've waitressed for 2 and 3 years at places. But most importantly, I think for women, it's the best money for the amount of time. I mean, you can go in and you can work a double shift and make, $250 or in a day if you're working at a good place. A lot less than that if you're working a place that that doesn't pay as well or that where the prices aren't as high.
But is it always...
But if you're doing a five-hour lunch shift, you know, and you walk home with... If you're a single mom doing a five-hour lunch shift and you walk home with $50, you know, that or $75, that's pretty good money for the time without having to put up with sitting at a desk and answering a phone and being an idiot.
Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina. Can you stay with us for a bit, Catherine?
Sure.
Okay, Missy's on the line. Hi, Missy.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, great, thanks.
Are you a waitress?
Yes, I am.
Where do you work?
I work at a Waffle House.
And how do you like it?
Actually, today's my last day.
Did you quit or were you fired?
I'm quitting.
Because you didn't like the work?
Well, we bought a house and I moved farther away and I don't want to travel that far anymore.
How did you like the work? How do you rate waitress work, Missy?
Well, I've worked in more upscale restaurants and I've worked at, you know, a Waffle House, and I found that people do treat you different at the place that you work.
You mean if you're at a Waffle House, you get treated as more low class than if you're at Chez Panisse, for example?
Bingo.
And how do you get the message back to the customer? Is it just not something you can penetrate?
You really can't. It's, you know, they see you there at a Waffle House and they consider you white trash or a woman of ill repute because that is what the norm that works there.
Well, I must say that I have... sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay, I must say that I have heard that some women say that's exactly their experience, and other women say that when you work in a place like a Waffle House or a place that's a little downscale, that you meet people who are much, much nicer to you, especially people who tip well, cab drivers and truck drivers and people who are blue-collar workers treat you better than when you work in a fancier place. They seem to think they are fancier and you're all that much lower.
You know, the waitress's stories always seem to come back to that relationship with the customer, and the way that relationship with the customer is marked and measured is with the tip. Catherine, in your conversation with Allison for the book, you're quoted as saying, you know, you always felt waitressing was more honest, that there's something inherently honest about doing a job and going home with cash at the end of the day.
Yeah, I was just making some notes here about that. I was just thinking about that. I think while it's true that customers tend to look down on people who serve food, the people who do serve that food, they take a certain pride in their work. And I think that pride is about the humility that is inherent in the idea of service. Women particularly, I think, would connect with that sort of, believe it or not, spiritual tradition that I think infuses the idea of service and pride in your work. I mean, Margie's comment before about being the bigger person when someone mistreated her speaks directly to that, I think.
Tip factor in that, though, Catherine? I mean, that means that the customer has the ultimate power role here in saying, I'm going to judge your service, and I'm going to judge it by the way I pay you.
Well, they think they do. I mean, we won't say what goes on back in the kitchen.
I don't think we allow those words on the radio, do we?
If you don't like a customer, I've seen people do some pretty nasty things to the food.
I don't think I want to hear about that.
Think you want to hear about that.
The waitress's revenge.
The waitress's revenge. But I think another important thing to remember about the relationship between waitresses and the people they serve is this, what I call sort of the Lord of the Manor complex. I mean, I think... going out to eat in America, whether you're in a diner or whether you're in a fancy restaurant, and probably more so in a fancy restaurant, but it definitely happens in a diner as well. I think when Americans go out to eat, I think it's sort of the working man's brief admission into the club of aristocracy that Americans deny exists at all. It's sort of a wave. It's astounding to me. It always amazed me how fast, like the typical wage earner or salary type person, would adopt the pose of Lord of the Manor.
We're talking about a sit-down restaurant here. We're not talking about a burger joint necessarily.
Oh, no, no, no. Burger joint doesn't work because you're serving yourself.
Right.
I mean, you really are. That's more of a retail exchange, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think that's true in a burger joint. But I think Americans, I think the average American, and particularly, like, upper middle class Americans, but I would say it's also across the board. Probably the more nouveau riche you are, the more you would tend to go out and really sort of lord it over the table and lord it over the help. I mean, the Lord of the Manor always knew the name of his help. It to me, it all goes to this sort of mentality of aristocracy.
Allison, like, we become someone who we're not when we're seated at a table in a restaurant.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I think one of the waitresses told me that she found it really amusing that the people, sometimes that the waiters would, however, take on the guise of these rich patrons they were serving. And they, in turn, would start acting very snobby toward their customers, as if, she said, as if they were the owners of the restaurant. And she said, they're not. They're workers like everybody else. But the relationship between the customer and the waitress or waiter, I find, is extremely psychologically fraught, because with women doing the serving, there are all kinds of mommy complexes that come in. Mommy's bringing me broccoli. One man threw his broccoli back at this waitress who was serving him at La Cote Basque because he somehow broccoli triggered some emotion. And there are all kinds of back and forth relationships that go on, with one trying to get the upper sociological hand with the other. It's just astonishing to me what goes on, and also what waitresses put up with, because they do need the tip from that customer who's putting them down.
Yeah, where do you draw the line between flirting and sex and
exactly.
In a way?
A lot of waitresses actually even referred to themselves as prostitutes, I mean, jokingly. And said that they're trying to get the most money they can out of this guy at the table.
How do you
and
draw
they
the
feel
line,
like
Catherine?
That?
Well, I think commenting on what Allison just said, I think that actually happens, and Allison knows from I'm sure her interviews that more than one waitress has been approached not just by customers but by her boss. I know I told Allison a story about that myself.
It's in the book.
Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking that, you know, eating out is sort of the poor man's brief grasp at the privilege of the upper class, meaning you can afford help. You can afford what they call help, right? A butler
yeah.
or a cook or whatever. For the brief moment you're in that restaurant, you can assume that pose. It's kind of like owning a big car, you know. It's a temporary sort of snatch at that upper class thing.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and Joe's joining us. Hi, Joe.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
I just wanted to comment that when I was younger and waited tables frequently, I probably learned more about tolerance and multitasking in working in restaurants than I have in any other career in my life. And what was interesting about it was I never took offense at anyone who sort of treated me as a servant, a menial servant. I always saw it as a challenge, and if someone was particularly difficult to deal with, I just sort of chalked it up to a case of ignorance, really, and didn't read much more into it than that. Now, having been a waiter, I'll also admit that I believe it's quite different for waiters than it is from waitresses.
Why?
I believe that men as waiters are treated quite differently than women as waitresses. I think there's a pretty distinct difference.
You mean more respect or more fear or...
I don't know if it's respect, but I believe that customers, particularly men customers, tend to order women around a little bit more than they would a man.
Yeah.
So I may not have dealt with some of the things that waitresses may have dealt with.
Allison, did you find that?
Yes, although I didn't really interview men, I interviewed a lot of waitresses who worked with a lot of men, and they did feel this, that men simply were given more respect, as if they're making a career out of it, as if waitresses are literally just working for their little pin money. Mm-hmm. And also they must be really the dregs of society to be doing this in the first place, whereas somehow the men the man received a sense of this European sense of a professional waiter, and somehow they had that, and they had less to put up with. But what the caller was just saying reminds me of something many, many waitresses have said, and I think both Catherine and Margie would probably agree, is that almost every waitress I know says that everyone who goes into a restaurant as a customer should wait tables for at least a week. Mm-hmm.
So themselves. They can, so they can see it from the other side. Catherine, that idea that Joe has of it being the ultimate multitask, I mean, he's talking about walking and serving and clearing and cleaning, but a whole lot of it has to do with your relations that customers don't see, relations in the kitchen.
Absolutely. I was just thinking that earlier when you were interviewing Allison, this sort of trench warfare mentality that happens among wait staff. I've worked with mixed wait staffs, men and women, and the women tend to have it a little more. The men tend to stay a little more relaxed, laissez-faire. You know, they don't feel that pressure. The women always responded to the pressure of like a really busy Saturday night. You know, and you've got 10,000 people waiting for a table. Kind of.
But in part, it's competition for tips.
It's not just that. It's a real. It's a high pressure job. You've got a lot to remember. You've got chaos in the kitchen, you know, just chaos on a busy night. If you're working in a busy place, you're under a tremendous amount of pressure to get the food out, not to drop it. You've got six plates on a tray. You know, you've got to whip that through this crowded dining room that's really noisy. I mean, it's real trench warfare mentality. It's like us against them.
Catherine, do you still wait?
No.
She said, with a deep sense of satisfaction.
I can't do it anymore. I just can't slap that happy smile on and say, what can I get for you?
Catherine, thanks for being with us.
It's very hard work.
I just want to, we're a little tight for time here. I'm going to say, Catherine, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Catherine Blunt on the line from Islesboro, Maine. And Joe in Chapel Hill, do you wait anymore?
No, I don't. It's been quite a number of years. But I will say, some of the best people I know worked in the restaurant business. And I wanted to add one other comment.
Be quick.
Dealing with tables where there was maybe a particularly brutal customer, I always made an attempt to make a connection with someone else
at the
table. And I think it made life a little easier at those times. We seemed to have some kind of bond there, some kind of connection.
Good advice, Joe. I'm afraid I have to go. We continue our program talking with Allison Owings about her book, Hey Waitress, when we come back. 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Allison Owings' new book is called Hey Waitress, the USA, From the Other Side of the Tray. It's a combination of oral history and social history and a story of some 35 waitresses from around the United States. It took Allison some considerable time, I think, 8 years, Allison, to pull it all together? That either makes it a tremendous amount of research or you a slow writer. I'm not sure which.
I'm a slow writer, and I also accidentally, I miscalculated, and I had a 1,400-page manuscript, and my publisher only wanted 400 pages. So I have enough for a sequel.
I want to go straight to the epilogue and quote from the book here, because it's an interesting conclusion that you draw when you say, and I'm reading here, tips make waitresses the most financially vulnerable women among this country's legal and illegal laborers, even prostitutes, with whom some waitresses ruefully identify. Get the money first. Waitresses may not get it at all. Whim, thy name is tip. Cheapskate, thy name is tip. Show off, big spender. Arithmetic failure. Happy, clueless muncher, thy name is tip. Expense account binger, thy name is tip. Rejected flirter, disgruntled steak eater. Peeved water drinker, thy name is tips. And then you conclude, tips, I'm convinced, should not be used as carrots or sticks. But we had Margie Watson, full-time, lifelong waitress, on the program with us, saying, you know, I'm only getting $2 an hour. I got to have the tips. Catherine Blunt was with us saying that's what gave her a sense of worth, was having something in her pocket at the end of the day. So what was it that led you to conclude, Allison, that tips don't work?
Well, for one thing, the women who get $2.13 an hour are getting that because they're supposedly in the state because they're supposedly getting tips, even if they're getting lousy tips. If there weren't tips, they should be getting at least minimum wage. Mm-hmm. And a couple of the women in the book, a union organizer, Beulah Compton, and California waitress Diana Candy, both spoke about tips as being absolutely soul-robbing. They don't like what women have to go through to get the tips. And a lot of waitresses say they'd like to have the 15 or 20% tacked on as a service charge, so they didn't have to go through these contortions to get them, and really to be false to themselves. And I think that that's why I'm opposed to them, even though I know I'm a minority. I think almost all waitresses like tips, in part, I think, because they represent sort of a lottery in this very hard game of waiting tables. They might get a $20 tip on a cup of coffee, and they look forward to things like that. But that sort of thing is kind of rare. And if they were to get a decent salary, maybe an extra tip for something or another, then I think they would get more respect from the customers, and they would have to put up with a lot less than they do. I think that any tipped employee is essentially looked down upon. I mean, you don't tip your professor, you don't tip your car mechanic, you don't tip people who get what they consider an honest wage. Mm-hmm. So I really think tips are soul robbing, even though I know a lot of waitresses like them just because you get the cash right then and you're out the door.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255, Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Elizabeth's on the line. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello there.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Great show. I was calling because I was a waitress when I was in high school at a Friendly's, and now I'm a businesswoman and, you know, college and got my master's, and and when I have business lunches with business women,
Elizabeth,
really, sorry.
You're cutting out. I'm afraid almost to the point where it's hard to follow. I don't know if you're near a landline, but we're going to let this line go because we can't stay with you. Okay, thanks for calling. And to where are we going? To Boston now. And Lindy's on the line. Hi, Lindy.
Hi. How are you? I was a waitress for about 15 years. 10 of those years I worked on Bourbon Street in New Orleans, so I think that creates its own culture.
That's a rough place to make a living.
It was
interesting tips.
I had a bachelor's in psychology, so that's what I did, is became a waitress. Not unfortunately, but right now I am a psychologist, but those 10 years taught me more about psychology than any school I ever attended. But being a waitress on Bourbon Street was, of course, a lot of fun. But speaking of psychology, I think you learn a lot about how to work with customers so that you don't jeopardize your tip, but at the same time you maintain your own self-worth and dignity. So I had a couple little tricks that I would use that would help me out, and hopefully they were being perceived as humorous by my customers. One thing, of course, is as in addition to being called "Hey waitress," "Oh miss" is another popular way of beckoning me to the table. So I used to, on my name tag, instead of having my name Lindy, I would write "Oh miss" on the name tag, and that usually got some laughs.
So educate us, though,
yeah.
Lindy. I mean, if I'm in your section and trying to get your attention, what's appropriate?
Well, certainly not clicking your fingers. Hopefully, if you're a good waitress, you will get to the table in a reasonable amount of time. If you're a good customer, you will appreciate perhaps that a waitress is busy or that they're working more tables than they ought to be. But that's another kind of, I guess, piece of educating the public about what waitresses do and how restaurants work.
So do we put a hand up? No. Do we say excuse me?
Could say excuse me, and I think you can. The clicking is out. I think if you need to put your hand up, that's reasonable. The clicking needs to go. The clicking with the "oh miss."
And the clicking is just all over the place.
It
I'm
is
surprised.
All over the place. It
ooh,
is.
Yuck.
Or grabbing a waitress by her apron.
Right. Right.
But Lindy, can I just sort of take this mythical encounter that we're having a little bit further? If I don't get the service that I think I should be getting, And I don't know whether or not Bourbon Street's a great example, because I don't know what I'm thinking
and
when I'm on Bourbon Street. But then do I tip less?
Absolutely. I think it's reasonable if you're an educated customer and you're understanding the elements which might go into the service not being good. If your food isn't good, you don't tip less. That doesn't have to do with the waitress's service.
Oh, exactly.
And I think a lot of people don't understand the mechanics of how the restaurant works, including the food preparation. Another thing that can happen, obviously, is the food delay. And again, if a waitress puts an order in right away, that food preparation is totally out of her control. Timing mm-hmm. of it, the quality of the food is out of her control. And then the waitress, who knows the kitchen's backed up, is tiptoeing by her tables because she knows that people are waiting for their food, and she's going by and saying, it's coming, I'm sorry. But often you find people that don't understand that, and they may say, waitress, where's my food? And, to that I started replying, well, gee, I think I saw it down the street having a drink. I'm really, it's in the kitchen.
Humor helps an awful lot.
Try to use humor. I could get away with it on Bourbon Street because it's such a touristy place and you weren't looking for repeat business. But I, do have an appreciation for other places where people would waitress.
Are you a better customer for having been a waitress?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to remind my in-laws not to click, and I make sure the tips are always good, and I'm very aware of how many tables a waitress is working, because if they're short-staffed, then they're going to be picking up extra tables, which interferes with the service.
So, waitresses can't help but go in a restaurant and immediately see whether the waitress is is just slammed with too many tables or not.
Absolutely.
I mean, waitresses can really, really have a hard time eating out because they see all the problems as soon as they go in the restaurant.
Absolutely. And I'm a good personal guest, too. I bus people's tables in their homes when I go to eat. So,
Lindy, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Nice to have you with us.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Belmont, Massachusetts now. And is it Jorama there?
Yes, hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. Great show. I just want to say I have been a waiter. It's been a while, and I've had many sisters and girlfriends who have been waitresses, so I understand a little bit, I guess, of what goes on. But I also, right now, I'm a business owner. I'm in the service field, and I also find myself having to be nice and having to be cordial. But one thing I realize is that niceness is a curse. Kindness is a blessing. So if we can really come from that spiritual point of serving and being kind rather than putting on a happy face and being nice, I think that can help the whole situation. What's wrong with one of your guests said that it can be soul-robbing to have tips. I don't necessarily agree, because at least if there's, some time where we're being nice and being cordial and actually really trying to serve, what is wrong with that, I guess? So that's my question.
Allison, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was quoting really the attitude of some of the women who feel that it's soul-robbing simply because they feel that they're doing a professional job and they should be getting a professional fee, salary, for doing
that
job.
It's like being on commission, though. The better we do, the better we get paid.
Well, if it could be connected to commission, I think that's something else. I think there are different ways that tips could be structured so that women aren't totally dependent on them. But I've heard many stories of many wonderful customers saying, you're just great, and here's another $20 for you, and they're very happy. But I've heard probably more stories about, my steak was underdone, I'm not tipping you at all, or I'll tip you more if you can repeat this dirty joke to me word for word. Then there's another 20% in it for you. And I just find that very, very often women find that they are being false to themselves to get their basic salary. So it's not just a commission per se, but it's just a dollar to help pay their rent they're not getting because they didn't smile at someone else's dirty joke, for instance.
Allison, let's see if we can squeeze in one more call here. We're going to go to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Pam's on the line. Hi, Pam.
Hi there. I was just reminded of an experience I had a few years ago. I had been recently divorced and volunteered to help a friend of mine who manages a very large and impressive corporate lodge in northern Wisconsin. And as I was helping her, I also work in a corporate world, and my ex-husband did as well. So we were often the recipients of this kind of entertaining, and now I was the waitress, essentially, and I realized that I was absolutely invisible. These men did not see me. And I actually joined in on a little bit of a conversation. They were talking about diving in the Caribbean, and I had done a lot of that, and I was telling them my favorite diving place, and they looked at me with just horror, like I had crossed some huge line.
Because you weren't supposed to be participating in their conversation, or because you weren't supposed to ever have been to the Caribbean.
Dive places, and I said, "Oh, have you tried the dogs on Virgin Islands?" And they looked at me like, "How could you even think to enter this conversation?" And I realized then that I was just an invisible person. They didn't see me or recognize me as a person at all. It was a really big awakening. And I had worked as a waitress in my own father's restaurant as a high school and college student, but it was a totally different kind of small town family experience. So I was the child of the family. I was not invisible. But in this instance, in this big time corporate, fancy, you know, wonderful place, I was a non-entity.
Yeah. Pam, thanks for your observation, because, you know, Allison, it sort of leads us to what I think you're trying to do in large part with the book, which is to get people to realize that these are people.
Oh, boy, did you ever sum it up perfectly? Yes, that's exactly it, that these women are indeed individual human beings. They're not invisible. They shouldn't necessarily join in the conversation at someone else's table. I mean, a lot of customers don't like that. But nonetheless, these are individual human beings who work extremely hard, much harder than I think most customers realize, and really are trying to do their best, and do have, in many cases, quite a sense of service. They like the idea of pleasing people. They go to such lengths, one said, to turn a frown into a smile. I think they have been underappreciated. I think they've been underheard, overlooked, and that's why I wrote the book.
And going back to what Joe Rama was saying, that though from the customer's point of view, it makes a difference. Even the customers see the difference between someone who's nice and trotting out just the sort of have a nice days and someone who is genuinely kind.
Yes, I think customers pick up on that a lot. I think customers pick up on it perhaps more sometimes than waitresses realize, and I know that waitresses pick up on a lot more than customers realize.
Allison, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. It's been terrific.
And nice to listen to some of the waitresses that you had a chance to speak to over the past few years.
Yeah, they're all great.
Indeed. Allison Owings, author of Hey Waitress. We talked a little bit earlier with the waitresses, Margie Watson in Memphis, Tennessee, and Catherine Blunt joining us from Islesboro, Maine. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
From Boston University.